conspiracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power at Grantham University. Now here's your host, Jason Forticola.
Today we'll be joined by AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, Local Presidents Tom Scott and Michael Freeman, and SSA Local 2006 Chief Steward Richard Gennetti. Welcome to the program, J. David Cox.
Hey, how are you this morning, Jason?
Good, good. We have a lot going on here today. Union brothers and sisters in Wisconsin are facing a battle to keep their hard-earned collective bargaining rights. What is your reaction to this situation?
Jason, this is an all-out war on union men and women and working men and women in this country. This is not about that there's a deficit in Wisconsin or with the federal government. It's about the assault on the right of employees to have collective bargaining, to join and form a union. These are very, very serious times, and they're annihilation of rights that men and women have worked for and fought for, and that members of Congress and the Constitution have guaranteed people in this country.
And why do you think this assault on collective bargaining rights on working men and women is taking place?
Part of it, I believe, it's because of greed. I also believe that it's an assault because they don't like the way that people in unions tend to vote. And that we support the middle class, that we believe that working men and women should be paid a fair wage, and that having health insurance and a retirement and job security is an important thing to everyone. These public employees, most of them are paid less than their private sector counterparts, and part of the trade-off has been with retirement and with health insurance and things of that nature. And now there's an absolute desire to just annihilate these rights for these workers.
And many of the things that you just brought up rarely seem to come into the argument in terms of bringing these things to the table. But really, we're hearing that it's about money, that it's a strain on the budget and that it can't be afforded any longer. How do you respond to those accusations?
This issue is not about money. It is about the destruction of worker rights. The unions, public sector employees in the state of Wisconsin, they have agreed to wage concessions and concessions in pension and health insurance and things like that. They've agreed to that. But what the governor is saying, no, you won't have the right to have collective bargaining. You won't be able to bargain over conditions of employment, the routine working conditions. You will not be able to join a union and to agree to pay union dues to that union through payroll deduction. It's about the annihilation of rights. That's the big issue. It is not about the money. It's about the destruction of unions and also the destruction of people that have supported candidates that support working men and women in this country.
And what's the response to this? Because we know that whatever happens in Wisconsin potentially has the potential to go elsewhere in the country. How does the labor movement as a whole respond to this, knowing that if the labor movement gives up collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin, that whatever happens next could be catastrophic?
It's important that these workers and the citizens of Wisconsin continue to stand their ground. Each day, the group grows by thousands of people. Workers are from all over the country, and supporters from all over the country are weighing in. I just read a letter from the bishop of the United Methodist Church, who was at the governor's inauguration, who was informing the governor that it's a stance of the United Methodist Church that employees have the right to have collective bargaining, and that she was requesting that he give these people the right to have collective bargaining. And it wasn't just the United Methodist Church, the Episcopal Church, the Lutheran Church, the Catholic Church. Many, many other religious organizations were weighing in, saying, wait a minute, our stance, this is about social justice. This is about, the rights of citizens of this country.
J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer here on Inside Government, talking about collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin. J. David, now, AFGE represents, obviously, workers in the federal sector and D.C. government employees, but how are we rallying behind those union brothers and sisters in Wisconsin to help them through this time?
Many of our locals in Wisconsin are participating in these rallies and being very, very supportive. I've had messages from our local there at the Madison VA Medical Center, the Tomah, Wisconsin VA Medical Center, and one of our DOD locals there, the Milwaukee VA, other Social Security locals and things that's in the state of Wisconsin. Our members are rallying for the cause, understanding this, you know, is not just a fight about the state workers, the public employees in the state of Wisconsin. It's about all workers, that when these folks are done with them, they're coming for federal employees, private sector employees, that this is an issue that will only continue to grow. But our people are being out there every day and greatly involved in this fight.
And, of course, we've heard a lot of the talk these days, not only in Wisconsin but elsewhere, is about cutbacks and needing to save money and trim budgets and whatnot. And that obviously has gone all the way to the federal level as well, even with the potential of a possible government shutdown looming. What do you think about that in the talk of a government shutdown?
A government shutdown would prove devastating to the American people. I was very much involved in 1995-96 with the government shutdown, when there was just a screeching halt to government services throughout this country. The government employees were sent home. They wanted to work. They were ready to work, and they were saying, please let us come to work. But if the Congress does not appropriate money, it's illegal to allow those employees to work. Only essential services continue to operate. People were waiting to get passports that had plans. There was people waiting for Social Security claims to be processed. There was veterans waiting for veterans claims to be processed. The list goes on and on and on of the government services that were just shut down and did not exist.
You bring up a really good point there. I think a lot of times when these conversations come up in the press, it's all about the money. But you just hit on three key ones a minute ago: passports, Social Security claims, and veterans benefits claims. Those are three pretty important things. Obviously, the last two crucial to the American people.
Extremely crucial to the American people. People need these services, and when you stop and you think of all the government services that are provided, I mean, there are many things that happen, and it's not just the passport, it's the whole customs, immigration system, all of those type of things, things coming into this country, going out of this country. There's the food inspection, the list goes on and on. I mean, we have a safe food supply in this country because we have government regulations and we have food inspectors and things of that nature. That doesn't just happen by chance. Even when we have the outbreaks of E. coli and various contaminations of food and all, those, they do happen, but they're rare. If we didn't have food inspection, that would be an everyday occurrence by the thousands.
And you, being someone who's been involved in federal service and with AFGE for decades, as you mentioned, you lived through a shutdown in 95 and very early in 1996. How did the situations compare and contrast with one another in the rhetoric then and the rhetoric now?
The rhetoric is a whole lot the same. I mean, I'm hearing people say, no, 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 we're going to push it over the cliff. No, we're going to have these cuts. No. It's all about cut, cut, cut. I would remind everyone the dollars that's spent on federal employees' salaries did not create the budget problems of this country. It was the massive bailouts that we had to do to the banking systems and the fact that we've given tax cuts to the wealthiest of wealthy citizens in this country, and a rollback of many of those type things that has created the severe financial problems that we have seen throughout this country. I'd go back to many years ago, the savings and loan scandal. It was like, oh, we'll loan our friends $25 million and then just say, oh, by the way, we forgive you. Now government taxpayers pay that out. It wasn't some hardworking janitor in some VA hospital cleaning up and taking care of an environment for America's veterans that has created a lot of these problems.
And speaking of things like collective bargaining rights and workplace protections, what are your thoughts on the TSO campaign moving forward? I know you spent a lot of time on the road recently talking to TSOs, and they've obviously just been granted collective bargaining rights by TSA. What's the situation like there going forward?
The situation is great. I have never seen a group of employees so excited about the fact and the opportunity to vote to have AFGE as their union. I was in Salt Lake City, Seattle, and Portland last week. The support for an AFGE win in this election was just overwhelming to me. I mean, there was people from the time that I got there till I left at all hours of the day talking about their excitement to finally have the chance to vote for AFGE to be their union. And the great job that they knew AFG would do in bargaining them a contract and having a collective bargaining agreement. This is a very, very exciting moment for the TSOs and an exciting time for AFGE and all of its members to be organizing the largest federal group of workers in a long, long time in this country.
And as we come into our last minute here, give us a sense for what the morale is like now that the collective bargaining rights have been granted and an election for union representation is on the horizon.
I heard repeatedly it had been a long battle for many of the TSOs. The battle has been between 8 and 9 years waiting to get the collective bargaining. There is a sigh of relief and a feeling of excitement as March 9th, when the voting begins, that they're going to have the opportunity to vote for AFGE and then a vote for the collective bargaining rights that they now have. I have never seen a group of people be so ecstatic and about such an opportunity, Jason.
J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer. As always, J. David, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Jason. Have a good day.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Tom Scott, local president at AFGE's 987 Robins Air Force Base. Welcome back to the program, Tom.
Thank you, Dave.
So give us an update on what you've been up to recently.
Well, likely our locals dealing with OSHA and the citations at Robins Air Force Base. There's a lot of chromate 6, lead, chromium. The employees are being exposed to, in fact, OSHA had it where they read readings that was 342 times over the limit.
And so how do you respond to that?
Well, we worked with OSHA trying to get the agency to correct those hazards, and we're still working with them right now. And also our concern is make sure the employees get checked out, get a full physical, and make sure that environment changes for the better.
And what caused that contamination or that exposure to those chemicals?
It's the process that we use to remove the paint from the aircraft. The process wasn't actually doing what it's supposed to. There's a sanding booth supposed to suck in all that contaminants into an air filter system. It was not made for what we were using it for. It was more or less made for like buffing, light sanding. We were actually removing from top layer all the way down to primer. Heavy duty sanding.
And so when did you become aware of it, and when did you figure out that the processes that you were using were harmful to the workers?
Well, we had concerns from the employees, and some employees came to us, actually got OSHA involved, and then the union stepped in to assist them to get the answers to what we're looking for. We didn't get any help from the bioenvironmental people. In fact, there's a news broadcast from a previous bioenvironmentalist tester, who's a tech sergeant, was more or less told to shut up and color and not to report this to the employees.
And what kind of response did you get from management whenever you brought this to their attention?
Well, management was in denial, even with OSHA. They more or less trying to tell OSHA they didn't know their business. OSHA put us on a FedTAR, which is a federally targeted program. And then they started looking at the different buildings, and then more and more citations came along. They wanted to keep appealing it because we had a willful violation on those. They had the employees brooming or sweeping regarding those contaminants, making it airborne.
Talk about the importance of the union and its role in ensuring worker safety. I'm thinking back to a time when the Bureau of Prisons willingly and knowingly exposed the workers and the inmates to hazardous chemicals through its Unicor electronic recycling program. Your situation sounds similar to that. Talk about the importance that the local plays and the national union in assuring worker safety at the workplace.
The union and the AFG is supposed to work together to make sure there's safety and get involved, OSHA, EPA, or anyone else involved, try to correct those hazards. We've been instrumental to bring that there to their attention. And also we're taking legal action, try to get recovery for anyone's medical problems or, you know, exposure that they had for them or their families.
How is the situation of getting compensation for the workers who were exposed, getting their medical bills taken care of? Has management been receptive to that? Has the agency been willing to work with you on that?
No, they're still in denial. They're just saying that it's not enough exposure to actually warrant even a physical exam. So we're trying to get OSHA involved to assist us with that, and we do have pending litigation on that as well.
Why do you think there's an element of denial there?
Because they're culpable being liable. In other words, they're worried about the fallout of expense, because you understand chromate-6, the carcinogen, it's not going to happen automatically. You're going to see the effects of it. Something's going to happen within 20, 30 years. So they're worried about the fallout being the expense on workers' compensation. They're going to pay the millions of dollars, a wrongful death that may occur to the employees that worked out there.
And so what's the situation now? Have the processes been changed? Is the environment safer, despite management's denial that there was any real problem?
Well, they're actually changing the process now. It's actually becoming safer, but there's still areas. They just concentrate on the area that was cited, mm-hmm. even though that same process or condition exists in a previous building, could be right next door. They didn't do anything with that. So it's an ongoing thing we're trying to fix throughout the base, and this is not just a Robins Air Force base. It's actually through the whole Air Force Command, that process. We're finding out they were doing it the wrong way.
So are you engaging with other locals and other members of the union to sort of come together and fight this as a larger group?
Yes, we're working with the other locals within AFMC right now, but I feel it's going to branch out throughout all of the Air Force bases and locals.
So what is any? What are some things that workers should be on the lookout for if they aren't already monitoring these situations at their bases to know that there could be a problem?
Well, dealing with the Air Force, all that paint they have has chromate on it. Chromate-6 is a carcinogen. Once you get down to that primer level and you're creating dust and you're not wearing the right respirators, you need to get checked out and report it to your local or OSHA. Make sure the readings they're actually getting are correct.
And how does this impact not only the employees at the work site, but you mentioned that it was coming in the form of the dust? That dust gets on the workers' clothing. They take that home to their families, their children. Have you had any complaints or cases where that may have been a problem?
We have people making that assumption that I can't say 100% because I'm not an MD. It was associated being the cross-contamination they actually brought home with them because they had it on their personal clothes, then it moved into the wash machine with the family's clothes. So that's something we're looking at as well. You know, I don't know the full effects. So there's been reports that some children might be having cancer, but again, I can't correlate whether it's something that is natural being through genetics or through the dust. They were actually bringing that contaminated dust to their home. I know that for a fact.
So let's shift gears a little bit. What else do you have going on at Robbins other than the OSHA situation? What are some other things you're working on right now?
We got our new master labor agreement. I already got it done, ratified. We belong to Council 214. And then from there, we're going to go tackle the local supplement for the Air Force employees that we represent, and also DLA local supplement. We're going after it as well. And I think we're working with DECA Council to renegotiate their contract as well.
And so with the new master agreement, what were some added pieces in there or any changes from the previous agreement?
Well, we actually got reassignments negotiated now. Now they actually have to solicit people before they reassign them to another location and go by seniority and ask for volunteers.
And how big of an issue was that in the past?
It was pretty big because the management was more or less just hand-picking individuals, didn't go by seniority, and there was no rationale how individuals were chosen. It perceived as a penalty or vendetta against that supervisor, against one employee to another.
How many cases were there? How many complaints did you find people saying, oh, I was punished by being reassigned somewhere else or located in a different position or something like that?
We had several. A lot of them went to EEO. Some went to the grievance process. There's a lot of complaints just on that reassignment issue because there's no rhyme or reason or madness how they came to that selection process. I mean, they took the most senior person and backfilled them with a brand new employee that was a co-op that didn't know anything about working on the aircraft.
And so does management consult you on those items before they make a decision, or were these just being made unilaterally?
That was done unilaterally by those particular managers in that area.
And would that be a violation of the contract?
It is now that we have it in the contract. It wasn't before because we didn't have an article on a reassignment.
And so have you, since the master agreement's been ratified, have you seen changes in the procedures now? Are you interacting more with management on those issues?
Well, we just got it ratified. It's going through the DOD process, so it'll actually come in effect April 1st of this year.
So the other piece that's key here is, of course, the pay freeze for federal employees. How is that impacting you and your members at your base?
Well, there's a lot of stereotype being the perception that our employees make $100,000. These are aircraft mechanics, majority of them that work and support the warfighter. And my son being a Marine, I can relate to it. But they don't make this high amount of dollars. In fact, the contractor works right along the federal employee at the same base, makes $5 more an hour than the federal employee. And they got to sit here and actually train those contractors how to do the job. And here they are, don't understand why I'm getting $5 less. And they have better benefits along with it.
And they do the same jobs.
Same exact job.
Same hours in the day.
Same hours.
Just different pay.
Different pay, and actually the contractor has better health benefits and better pay than we do.
What do you think needs to be done going forward to send a message? You're obviously here this week at AFGE's Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference. What plans do you have to go to Capitol Hill and state your case as a hardworking federal employee who represents other federal employees that pay freezes are not the way to go?
Well, our membership and our stewards actually collectively got together over 2,000 petitions to bring to the attention to the congressmen and senators. Hopefully that'll send the message. It's not, you know, an isolated issue. We're not no $100,000 paid SESs. We're just basic employees, middle-class America, just trying to make a living and support the warfighter.
And the situation that you brought up about federal employees working side-by-side with a contractor yet having less benefits, less pay by $5 an hour, what goes through your mind whenever you see something like a pay freeze come down from the very top of our country that has a real impact on people and their families?
Well, I see it later on. It's going to have an effect with the actually retaining quality employees in the federal government. The younger generation is more or less going to quit the federal government side, civil service. And with the baby boom, more or less close to retirement, you're going to look at a gap, a transition, where you're not going to have that experienced worker to perform that federal job.
And so we're also looking at likely an impending wave of retirees coming with baby boomers nearing the end of their working careers. And you're saying it's going to be harder to fill those positions because the younger generation will choose to work in the contractor role for $5 more an hour.
The younger generation are actually just following whoever pays the most. They're not going to stay with a company long term. They're going to go whoever pays the most. They're going to chase that rabbit. So being the federal government, we're now behind the curveball being $5. And each year that transpires is going to be more or less another dollar here or 50 cent here. We're going to be behind that curveball. They can more or less go work for the contractor.
And what do you think the right course of action is now that the pay freeze has been handed down? And, of course, there's talk of spending freezes all across the government. What do you think the right thing to do is now?
Well, like I said, the federal employees and the American public understands we need to make cuts. You know, things that makes actual sense you need to cut. If they want to cut something, cut the congressional regarding all the mail they put out, all the employees, why don't they use email? I mean, everyone, you know, simple things like that. Look how much money they spend, all their aides and all their stuff they spend, having each person, each constituent, have an office in each one of these cities in their district.
We're down to about our last minute. Final thoughts.
Well, like I said, I hope this conference helps move this agenda and actually communicate to the Congressman Center the direction they need to move at. Like I said, I understand we need to make cuts, but I don't think it needs to be in the back of the federal employee that's working for support the warfighter.
Tom Scott, president of AFGE Local 987 from Robins Air Force Base. Tom, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government, but listen to our members. The real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Michael Freeman, president of AFGE's VA Local 498 from Puget Sound. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So you're here today at AFGE's annual Legislative and Grassroots Mobilization Conference in Washington. What do you have going on this week?
Well, this week, we're after our plenary session, we're going to be going out to the Hill to lobby with our congressmen and our senators and try to get the word across on our issues.
Who in the House and the Senate will you be meeting with?
We'll be meeting with Senator Patty Murray, who is just currently became chairman of the Senate Veteran Affairs Committee. We'll be speaking with one of her protégés, I guess you should say, Senator Maria Cantwell. We'll be speaking with Congressman Norm Dix, Congressman Adam Smith, and Congressman Jay Inslee.
And what are some of the issues that you'll be bringing up to the members of Congress and the senators?
Well, one of the The high issues on our list will be federal pay freeze. We'll be talking about retirement. They want to reform the federal retirement system, which we're against. They want to reform our benefits as far as our pay and our retirement. So those would be some of the key issues that we would be talking about.
And what about the pay freeze will you be sharing with them?
What I'd like to speak with them in reference to the pay freeze is that we should not be made scapegoats because of the federal deficit as federal employees. Most of our employees do not make over $100,000 a year. And when they refer to federal employees who are overpaid, they're referring to the people on the high end of the scale. And we're at a majority of people on the low end of the scale. So what we wanted, the message that we want to send to Congress is that we don't think it's right for them to try to reduce the deficit at the on because of the lower paid federal employees.
And what kind of response are you expecting from them?
Well, I'm going to be open-minded about it, and I'm not going to try to, you know, rush the judgment. I'm hopeful they will listen to us and with an open mind. And I think we'll get a positive response. We have in the past. We've been pretty good with Congress in the last few years. This is about the fourth year I've been here. And they've worked pretty well with us outside of some of our Republican legislators who had some different ideas. But we have the philosophy that whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you're supportive for our issues, that's the big thing.
And how about the retirement piece? You mentioned that would be something that you would be bringing up on your trips as well.
Yes, the retirement piece is what they have in mind is if you're under the old system, your annuity is averaged on your last 3 years of federal service. What they want to do is change it from the last three to the high five, which would cost, which would actually take away a lot of the money that people would receive in their annuity. They would receive less money if they go to that type of system.
And talk about how that impacts a worker, those changes to the retirement plan, the changes obviously with the pay freeze. How does that impact the worker?
Well, the impact after they retire would mean would translate into several thousand dollars in terms of their annuity that they would not receive, which is a big impact on their retirement.
What do you think should be the proper way to address some of these things, to address the deficit instead of putting it on the backs of the federal employees?
Well, you know, we have a lot of wealthy individuals in the United States who really don't pay their fair share of taxes, and I think that's something that should be addressed. If you're making $20 million a year, for example, to pay $1 million in taxes, if you can make $20,000 a year, I think you can afford to pay $1 million in taxes. And I don't think it's going to change your lifestyle that drastically to do so. So that would be one thing I would really like for our legislators to take a look at.
As a member of AFGE's VA Council, your group of fellow members saw some explosive growth in 2010 in terms of increased membership.
Indeed.
How does that impact your ability to get things done, not only at home in Puget Sound, but when you come here to Washington and you go up on Capitol Hill?
Well, it gives us a stronger voice. And as you know, we are still currently involved in the war. And we have a lot of young people coming back from the war. And I'm thinking that if you look at the big picture across the board, our increased membership will give our voices, will give us a stronger voice to our legislators and have them give them an opportunity to take a look at these things and see the impact that the VA has on our, not just our current veterans from Vietnam and World War II as well and the Korean War, but also our younger veterans who are coming in with lots of problems will be long-term VA veterans who will be asking for services for a longer period of time.
And you're no doubt referring to things like PTSD or traumatic brain injury from conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. How is the VA dealing with those complex injuries?
Well, there's been some new programs. Prosthetics has increased. From the last couple of years, the budget from prosthetics has increased. We've had suicide prevention coordinators who were hired in the last couple of years, whereas previous to that, we did not have those programs in place. So that's been a part of the changes that have occurred as a result of this type of war because of the mental health and PTSD problems.
And how do you see the VA evolving and adapting to deal with these kinds of things?
Well, what's going to happen is they're going to have to expand on their programs, for example, the ones we just spoke about, along with women veterans. We've had a large increase of women veterans over the last couple of few years, and that's been a big impact on the VA. So when you expand your programs, that means you need more staffing, which requires more funding. And that's something else that we want to talk to our congressional leadership about.
And speaking of that, how are the staffing levels at the VA? How are the funding levels?
Well, the funding levels are not really adequate. And a big part of that is because when you look at the higher paid leaders that we have, I think that we have several layers of management that we really don't need, where if they're gone and you replace them with hands-on workers who are actually doing hands-on patient care and providing services, I think the VA would be a lot better off down the road and currently as well as down the road.
Yeah, and you're talking about, you know, some hands-on workers and people who are in there serving the veterans each and every day.
Correct.
Talk about the commitment that they show to their jobs and their country.
Well, you know, you have a lot of people who work for the VA who are themselves veterans. I, for one, am a veteran. And so when I see patients coming into the VA, I want to see them treated like I would want to be treated if I was a patient at the VA. And you have a lot of people in our workforce who feel the same way. And they work really hard to try to serve the veterans. There's quite a bit of frustration because what happens is when you have low staffing, it creates a little more frustration in the workforce. So as you change those sort of things, I think it would provide, along with being better services being provided, it would reduce a lot of the frustration in the workplace, and it would make it a lot more harmonious work environment.
And how about where you're located in Puget Sound? How are the working conditions there?
The working conditions at Puget Sound, overall, actually, to be honest, when I look at a lot of the other VAs, I think we provide a very good level of service. We have a lot of veterans in our area because we have a large Army base there. We have a large Air Force base. We also have a Navy base up in Bremerton. So there's a large amount of veterans who come to Washington State for services as a result of that. They get out of the military and they stay in the area. So that increases our veteran population as well.
And as we come into our last minute, I want to give you the last word.
Well, I would like to say that, first of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the time that you've given me. And I would like to get the message out to not just the VA workers, but the community as well, and try to solicit the support of people in the community, because this is something that touches just about every family in America. They have a veteran in their family, or they know someone who has a veteran in their family. So to all those people out there, I'd like to say I'd like to have your support and your consideration.
Michael Freeman, president of AFGE's VA Local 498, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government. But listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at insidegovernmentradio.com. We've been joined by Richard Gennetti, the chief steward of AFGE SSA Local 2006. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Welcome. Happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing here at the legislative conference.
Well, we're here to talk to our legislators, and there are 16 of them from the three-state region that we service, a three-state region that provides the employees for the Mid-Atlantic Program Service Center of the Social Security Administration. Our 900 members are about 80% of the employees of that center. And we're here to tell them that the federal government employee works extremely hard. I would say that most of the people in my building, most of our members, work overtime every day, work overtime Saturdays and Sundays. We take our jobs tremendously seriously. We know that we are sending people's grandmothers and fathers and aunts disability checks and retirement checks. We send out 60 million checks nationwide. We send out 60 million checks a month. If we don't send those checks out, then the economy dies. Make no mistake about it. Now, we take our jobs extremely seriously. We're not sure that the federal government leaders, the congressmen and senators, treat us fairly. My understanding is we're going to have a 2-year wage freeze. I make $55,000 a year. I'm a GS-9. I don't make a tremendous amount of money. My wife is on disability. Her disability check has also been frozen. Neither one of us has gotten any kind of an increase since 2008. Now, I don't know where they're getting their consumer price index information, but I see my gas prices going up. I see my wife's medicine bills have doubled since 2008. I see the cost of my food going up. My understanding is they don't count food and medicine anymore. Well, if you don't count food or medicine, then you're really not doing a fair evaluation of the consumer price index. I realize that the congressmen and senators have to make a statement to their constituents, and we're the only dog that they can kick. But in fairness, we work tremendously hard at Social Security. We help people's grandmothers, aunts, and uncles. We help the disabled. And for them to beat up on us and to tell us that we don't do a good job and we're not entitled to a pay increase, and then I hear that they're planning to make retirees go with the last 5 years instead of the last three, they're really beating up on the federal government workforce.
So you're working overtime, you're under a pay freeze.
That's correct.
And all of your costs are increasing just like every other American.
That's exactly right. Why would you do that to the employees who are working hard to help American citizens? I mean, whether or not you agree with the program, that's another matter for another day. We're there, we're working hard, we're American citizens, we're loyal, devoted Americans, many of them are veterans, and we're working hard to help our fellow citizens. Why would you kick us in the head? Why would you make it harder for us? Why would you humiliate us and force people into early retirement? We also are facing a tremendous increase in demand. The baby boom is all retiring. Disability claims are up. If you're going to drive experienced employees out of the agency by the way you're treating them, you're going to replace them with inexperienced employees and make more mistakes. I know the agency, the administration had wanted to let everybody file online. But there's going to be a lot of people who can't do that. My father, my aunts and uncles, they can't file online. And besides, even filing online, mistakes have to be made. And we have to check those mistakes and get the benefit checks right. Our responsibility is to send the right check to the right individual. And all of the things that I see happening from our recent legislative leaders making our job harder, not making our job easier. I just don't understand why you would do that. I think there must be a disconnect. They must not recognize how hard we work, how dedicated we are to our jobs, how much we care about helping not only our aunts and uncles and grandmothers and fathers, but everybody's grandmother, grandfather, and uncle gets a Social Security check at a certain point. So we know that we're helping America directly. We talk to those beneficiaries usually 2 days a week. I know I'm a benefit authorizer. I'm on the phone 1 day a week talking to people who have problems and need it. Benefits adjusted. So we have direct contact with the American people. We help the American people directly. We work very hard. There's no reason whatsoever why Congress would be justified in putting us on a pay freeze or making the retirees use the best 5 instead of the best 3 years, hurting their retirement benefits. There's no justification for that. And there's no justification for treating federal government employees like they're lazy, shiftless people when they actually work tremendously hard.
What do your representatives, members of Congress, say to you when you bring this argument to them?
Well, they're all very sympathetic. They understand. They listen. But then ultimately, the votes of the parties tend to be squeezing the federal employee. Over time, they contend that the federal employee doesn't do enough or that the jobs that we're doing ought to be done by somebody else. Well, maybe that will happen someday. I hope not. But it's certainly possible. But in the meantime, we're there and we're working hard every day and we're making life better for their constituents and for everybody's aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters who are disabled, and parents.
And so you're here this week as part of AFGE's legislative conference. What are your objectives for the week?
Our objectives for the week is to make sure that our 16 legislators in the 3 states that surround Philadelphia, Delaware, South Jersey, and Eastern Pennsylvania understand how important it is, the work that we do, how hard it is to continue to work at the level of efficiency that we have while they continually freeze our wages, make retirement more difficult for us, and now they're looking at replacing every 2 retirees with 1 employee, which is going to make the job even harder for us to do. We want them to understand that we care about our jobs. We want to help the American people. That's why we took this job. That's why we love this job. And they're making it hard for us to help the American people.
When you heard about the president's proposed 2-year pay freeze, what went through your mind as a dedicated SSA employee?
My thought is, my goodness, how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to take care of my wife? How am I going to save for retirement? My bills are going up. The gas prices are now over $3 a gallon. My wife's medical bills have doubled. Food prices are going up. It's going to be harder for me to live my life. It's going to be harder for me and my family. It's going to be harder for all of us. And to be perfectly honest, I started to think about, well, maybe I can take my education and experience out to the private sector. Maybe there's more money out there for me. I'm not the only one, I'm sure, that thought that. Now, I've only been in the government 5 or 6 years. But I know that there are many people who, hearing this news, are contemplating retirement. People who would stay another 5, 6, 7, 10 years to get us past the on-crush of the baby boom, who have 20, 30 years experience in the federal government. You're going to force those people to retire now. That would be a mistake.
So you're actually confirming that there is an issue with retaining talented employees because of this pay freeze initiative.
This pay freeze initiative, and then the initiative to change your retirement benefits based on, instead of the top 3 years, they want to take the top 5. That's another thing that's forcing people to say, well, let me retire before that goes into effect, because my top 3 is better than my top 5. And why you would want to drive experienced, knowledgeable employees out of the job, replacing them with either nobody or replacing them with, you know, new and somewhat inefficient and less experienced people is beyond me. It only hurts the American people, and it only hurts the federal treasury.
And as an AFGE member, an AFGE activist, what is your plan going forward to fight back on these things, to keep what you have and not have to give up anymore?
Well, our plan is to stay in touch with our legislators, make sure they know how it affects the everyday federal government worker, the people they depend on. When they call the payment center because one of their constituents has a problem and they talk to the assistant regional administrator and the public affairs guy, eventually it comes down to me. eventually it comes down to the lady sitting next to me. We're the ones that have to fix the case so that that constituent that came into her office had had a problem gets the check she expects to get or gets the problem resolved. One of us has to make the fix. Now, if you're going to beat us up and make people who are experienced at this work go home, it's going to be harder and harder to fix those problems and harder to help those people. I think there's a disconnect between what they see, what for the rhetoric that some of them speak because they have to get elected and they have to speak to their constituents, and the actual reality of the work. The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to my local and get as many of my local members to contact their congressmen and senators and to stay in touch with the Legislative Affairs Committee so that when we have rallies, when we have events, they can participate, and hopefully their congressmen and senators will recognize that this is a caring workforce that wants to do a good job, that doesn't need it to be made harder.
Let's talk about the mission and the purpose of your agency, SSA, and how important it is for seniors to have this benefit available to them.
My understanding is that as of now, the Social Security check that seniors receive is 60% of the income of 60% of the recipients. So if 60 million people are getting checks a month, then I guess that's 35 million of them. We are more than half of their household income. If we don't get that check to them, their life is crippled. Their life is made very much more difficult. So we provide 60% of the income to 60% of the seniors in the United States. Now, that's a tremendous number of people, and that's people that have no other avenue. If we don't get that check to them, they can't run out and get a part-time job, most of them. Some of them are disabled, and again, their disability prevents them from working. We provide, you know, a tremendous amount of income on a monthly basis, which goes into the economy, which gets spent at the grocery store, it gets spent at the gas station, which pays people's bills, which keeps the economy going.
Share with us, if you can, maybe a personal story or two of someone that you see coming into your office in Pennsylvania who is dependent upon that check. And what would it be like for them if they were no longer able to have that?
Well, I answer the 800. We don't have as many. We're not a district office or a regional office where people come in and file claims. We're a regional payment center, and claims come to us from the local offices, and then we service them. But I do talk to beneficiaries on the phone once a week. When it's a level one day, I'm on the phone for 8 hours. So people will call up, and they will be crying and complaining that they don't have their check and they're going to lose their house, and they have this problem with they got a letter in the mail that says they owe the federal government $20,000. And we've had people, not me personally, but we've had people on the phone that threatened to commit suicide. They were so upset over the mail that they got and the problem that they're facing. Now, in my own case, I know of a lady who was apparently didn't get her Social Security check on time and is in a foreclosure, had a foreclosure situation coming up within a week because she couldn't pay her mortgage. She hadn't got the check on time in the last 2 months. I sent her to the local office and they cut her an emergency check because the local offices, I want to stress, they do a tremendous job. They face these people every day one-on-one, and it's a draining situation that they're in, and they have a tremendous level of work. So that lady, because of what the district office did and my ability to direct her to the district office and correct the small problem on her payment record, got some money, was able to pay off the mortgage and stop the eviction. It was actually an eviction from a rental property. But she was about 2 months behind on her rent, and without this check, she would have fallen far enough behind that she would have been evicted.
Well, we certainly appreciate the efforts that you are making as a federal employee and the service that you've committed to your country, and AFGE will certainly stand behind you every step of the way.
Well, they have, and thank you very much. I just want to say lastly that we love our jobs. We're happy to do them. We're proud of the work we do. The people that I work with are sort of the unsung heroes of the American workforce. We don't ask the government to do anything but treat us fairly. We don't want any extra benefits. We don't want any extra things. We just want to be able to go to work, do our jobs, concentrate on helping the American people without being penalized for doing so. Thank you.
Thank you to our guests this week, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, local presidents Tom Scott and Michael Freeman, and SSA Local 2006 Chief Steward Richard Gennetti. And that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchase.